Hello and welcome to In Focus with Insight. My name is Pamela Hillig. I'm head of Insight Life Solutions, and this is an episode of the Open Books series in which we get to know fascinating and inspiring people in the actuarial and insurance communities through the books that they have read and loved. Today, I'm joined by Marusha Narayan Sami. Marusha is an associate actuary with more than 16 years of experience in insurance. Her expertise spans across both life and non-life practice areas, with her most significant career achievement being starting up an actuarial division at Rand Mutual Assurance, or RMA. She is currently on to her second divisional executive role as head of actuarial at a new startup division of PPS called Glue Mutual, focusing on individual life. In her free time, she enjoys traveling, being outdoors, and training at the kickboxing gym. Welcome to the podcast, Marusha.
Thanks, Pamela. Lovely to be here.
So tell me, are you a reader?
I am. I try to be. You know, if I'm not working at the office, working long hours, I definitely try to make time to, you know, read and unwind. I've learned the importance of expressing yourself well. And I think that's something that, you know, books are able to give you, and also being able to feel the pages, feel the emotions of the stories. It's something that, yeah, I thoroughly enjoy.
So I just need to make more time for it. Yeah, when you're not kickboxing or traveling or starting up insurance division, like general divisions. I was going to ask, when you say feel the pages, does that mean you like a physical book?
Oh, no, in the physical books, yeah. I kind of do the Kindle or PDFs.
Okay, no audiobooks either.
No audiobooks. I struggle with audiobooks because I'm less auditory sensitive, more visual, more of a visual learner. And yeah, I just think that, you know, with books, you often want to go back and reread a line and memorize something that really resonated with you. And it's difficult to do it with an audiobook. And I'm the person that loves to highlight in my books. So it's also difficult to do that.
The gray have a physical copy. Agreed. Well, I'm glad that you are so passionate about reading and books, because this isn't your normal podcast interview, in that we will get to know you and speak about things that you're passionate about, but through the avid angle of books that have shaped you in some way. So you can think of it as the desert island discs for bibliophiles. So we've already started talking a bit about your reading habits, but maybe you can kick off by telling us, what is keeping you busy these days?
What's keeping me busy in terms of work. So I recently started at the startup division of PPS named Glue Mutual. We've developed a host of life insurance products, you know, with the focus on the core principle of mutuality. And what we've been able to achieve in the past month has been nothing short of phenomenal. I think, you know, the team, we're running quite a lean team. So that does mean that the team do need to put in additional hours. So, you know, I found myself working quite hard, working very long hours, getting very little sleep. But, you know, it's just so rewarding that you're able to create something from scratch and leave a legacy. I mean, these are the products that we are creating and pricing now that will be sold 10, 20, 50, 100 years into the future. And yeah, so I think, you know, work has kept me quite busy. And in between, like I said, you know, I love trying to unwind, upskilling where I can, reading, traveling, you know, working those long hours. You do need to just take a break. So yeah, that's kept me busy for the past couple of months.
Okay, but hopefully you still have a bit of time for reading, because that's often the first thing that goes, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I think last year, or in the past 12 months, I haven't been able to read as much as I normally do. Yeah. But this year, I made a commitment to myself that I will read at least one book a month. And, you know, I focus on reading, you know, some of the heavy stuff, business, you know, something that I can learn from, self-help, that sort of thing. And this year, I said, I'm going to read whatever's there. My husband's quite an avid reader, my sister, my parents. So we swap books quite often. And yeah, whatever they are reading, and, you know, whether it's fiction or a short story. It's a commitment that I've made to myself, just to, you know, make time and switch off and get through the at least a book a month.
So what genres do you typically enjoy? Is it the heavier self-help business stuff, or do you like the fiction?
The self-help, I'm always keen to expand on my skill set and learn new concepts and try to incorporate it in my everyday life. Whether it's, you know, a book like 8 Rules of Love by Jay Shetty, you know, just understanding what it is that I need to do to work on myself, to make myself a better partner, what I need to look for in my partner, etc. You know, the self-help books, I'm always looking to take something away from a book. And the other genre that I really enjoy, and I think it's just because I'm such an inquisitive person, is autobiographies. I love autobiographies. Yeah, just understanding the insights and the intimate insights into decisions that we often see on the outside, but we don't really understand the details and the insights, the thought processes that would have gone into the decisions that various people make. And, you know, the stories that I've read, the autobiographies have just been so inspiring that people have been able to achieve so much in their lifetime. It makes me often stop to think, you know, what is your purpose and what are you really contributing in this lifetime? If you're only able, to work 15-hour days and contribute to your career and contribute to the company that you work for, how do you extend beyond that? And how do you contribute more meaningfully? A lot of, you know, the interesting individuals that I draw inspiration from have had impacts, not just, in terms of their career. It's always multifaceted. And always, you know, if you think about the hierarchy of where you start focusing on yourself, and then there's a layer of evolution where you start worrying about people outside of yourself, you know, usually happens when people become parents.
Okay.
And where you start caring for someone other than yourself. And that's the sort of inspiration that I've been able to draw from the autobiographies that I've read, is that there's always, you know, alignment with the good of the collective and not just themselves. Yeah.
I think that's actually a good segue to the book that we're going to speak about first, because is that an autobiography, a memoir?
Yes, a memoir, yeah. Of Dr. Emmanuel Taban. I had heard about his story in bits. My mom is a nurse and she worked with Dr. Taban at a hospital in Pretoria.
Oh, so how you found out about
him? Found out about him, and this was many, many years ago, and his book was released, I think, in late 2021, and I managed to get a copy. And I remember Takealot had delivered on a weekday, and I could not wait to log off to start reading this book. And I read it cover to cover in one sitting, pausing briefly just to wipe away my tears. His story is just such an inspiring one. And, you know, it tells of his story. He was born in South Sudan, and he fled this war-torn country at the age of 15. Mm-hmm. And what he's been able to achieve since, he traveled by foot to South Africa through 6 countries over 18 months. When he finally got to South Africa at the age of 17, that was when he started his uninterrupted schooling. And what he's been able to achieve since has been, you know, nothing short of absolutely, you know, spectacular achievements and a whole list of accolades. He is now a specialist pulmonologist, and he's been chosen as one of the 100 most influential Africans in 2020. In 2021, Daily Maverick's African Person of the Year. in 2022 Aurora Prize for Humanity, Awakening of Humanity. So, you know, the list just goes on. He's an avid reader. He's an ambassador of Rally to Read, where, you know, the organization focuses on bringing quality books to schools. Yeah, just an all-round phenomenal person. I read the book first in, I think it was late 2021, early 2022. And then I actually met Dr. Taban in 2023. I had a pneumonia and didn't go to the GP. I went straight to the pulmonologist. And I was so excited because, you know, he
saw the silver lining.
I know. But, you know, my family say it's because I just really wanted to meet him and wanted my book signed. So, yeah, I got my book signed in 2023.
Is this the book that was signed?
It was the book that was signed, yeah. So,
first of all, The Boy Who Never Gave Up.
The Boy Who Never Gave Up, A Refugee's Epic Journey to Triumph. And he says, life is a journey that needs purpose. Never, ever give up on your dream or your health.
So which hospital is he at now for those who want to contract pneumonia?
Meet. And meet him just for some inspiration at a cost of a consultation. He's at the med clinic in Midstream.
Okay. And I'd like to ask, you mentioned, you know, you like self-help books, autobiographies. Something I'm always interested in is how do you absorb the lessons from these books and actually implement them instead of just, you know, reading the book, thinking, oh, this is useful, and then forget about it, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think with books, you read something, it's fresh in your memory, you want to implement it immediately. And with time, you know, your memory does fade, which is why I like to highlight the book. I keep many of my self-help books. We do rotate books within the family, but, you know, some of my favorites, I always try to keep them in my home on my bookshelf. And, you know, what I've also learned to do is just write in little sticky notes. I'll show them to you. You know, just what I take away from the book. And just being able to jot down those key points that resonate with you. But I think, you know, it also depends on when you read the book and your circumstances at that time.
Mm.
That really does, you know, impact on what you take away. So, you know, having read this book in, you know, when it was first released versus reading it with a different lens in 2023, you pick up on things that you hadn't picked up, you know, the first time around. And yeah, especially with self-help books. I've recently read a book, and we'll get to that now, The Four Future Seasons by Dr. Craig Wing. It's a very heavy book, and it's something that I feel that I have to reread in order to really get the full value of it. It's like, you know, watching a movie, you notice things, you get to the end of the story, you understand how everything fits together. But just watching it again, you get to, yeah, just get little additional nuggets, and like I said, very much dependent on the lens with which you read it again.
100%. Do you tend to reread books as a rule? Or
I do, yeah.
Okay.
My sister, my twin sister likes to call me a repeat
quest.
I have a twin sister, yeah. She lives in Brisbane. So I
just an S3.
No, she's an environmental engineer.
Okay.
Very, very different personalities. But she also loves reading. So she calls me a repeat queen. If I like something, I want to do it over.
And oh, like holiday destination. Exactly. Restaurants.
Restaurants, exactly.
Yeah, rather go somewhere where you know you'll enjoy it than take a chance.
Exactly.
Because there's only so many books you can read in your life. So do you have a favorite quote from The Boy Who Never Gave Up for us?
Yeah. So, you know, Dr. Taban starts talking quite early in the book about how, you know, as Africans, he says, in Africa, we're born into hardship. We never learn from it, but rather blame others for our suffering. By doing so, we accept the status of permanent victims with no control over our destiny. And then he goes on to say, you know, when he finally gets to South Africa, he says, today I sometimes wonder how I managed to travel all those thousands of kilometers virtually penniless. Was it God, the universe, or pure luck? But whatever it is, I'm grateful for it. What must have helped was that I was still quite young and people seemed to take pity on me. For one, there was the golden thread of the various Comboni missionaries and nuns, as well as other Catholic clergymen who helped me along the way. But also, I was never afraid to take the first step and take responsibility for my own destiny. And that really resonated with me. You know, it's easy to take the easy way out and, you know, play the victim. But here's a man who really did take control and shaped his own destiny. And that, yeah, is a key takeaway for me.
On that note, can you tell us a bit about your adventures, perhaps starting with GLU, where you are now? We can, you know, talk about earlier ones later, but what is GLU all about? How, you know, what is its purpose? How does it speak to you and your kind of greater purpose in life?
Okay, so at GLU, a core principle is mutuality, and we have a mandate to bring mutuality to a wider South African audience. Mutuality has been taken away from South Africans over the years, you know, with the number of companies demutualizing and a shift in focus on creating shareholder value. With a mutual, your policyholders are actually your shareholders, and our members are basically at the core of everything we do. There are a couple of mutuals that are still operating in South Africa, PPS probably being one of the most prominent. And they have this amazingly powerful concept of profit share, you know, and their allocations to their members have just been really, really spectacular over the years. They've been able to share in profits with their members. And we want to achieve something quite similar, but to the non-professional market, to the wider South African market.
PPS is known for serving a professional market.
The professional market, that's right. And GLU was born out of the idea to take mutuality to the non-professional and the wider market. And, you know, just even the name GLU, it represents, you know, there's the GLU with the little circle, the G, and that is core to our brand and our identity around profit sharing. So that's the mutuality aspect, sharing in the piece of the pie, sharing in profits, you know, but also coming together. And that circle represents coming together, financial inclusion, bringing people into the circle, making the circle bigger makes it better. And also, you know, just the financial togetherness concept around, we want to be your financial bestie. We understand that there's a lot of anxiety that South Africans experience when purchasing financial services products. And we want to help you navigate that journey and ease that anxiety. So this financial togetherness, inclusiveness is core to our values at GLU. And then that's where our brand and actual name came from, you know, GLU, bringing all of these very powerful forces together and sticking together. So you will note circles in our branding, and yeah, that's
exactly colorful
circles. You know, the brand is very playful, but mm-hmm. we're still serious because we offer financial services. But we want to do it in an accessible way, in an easy to understand way. You know, as you would confide in your bestie, we want you to come to us to help you navigate this complexity of financial services. And I loved the name GLU, even from an actuarial perspective, because, you know, we were very focused on creating products and pricing of the products that added value to our members for their lifetime. And this, you know, I really, you spoke about purpose and how does this position and this role and the company itself really align to my purpose. You know, my parents had life insurance for many years, you know, and with a term of 65. So my mom is now turning, is close to 65. And she says to me, but what do I get? You know, this cover will end, but what do I get for all of the premiums I've paid over the years? And that's where mutuality becomes so powerful. You know, we would profit share, even if there is a claim, you still are eligible to share in profits. And that's really speaking to bringing communities together and the collective good that, you know, coming together is able to achieve. So really, it does resonate with my purpose of creating value, you know, not just for shareholders, but for the members who actually contribute to the success of your business.
Mm. Oh, I mean, I'm a big PPS fan. I always sign me in the quote to my profit share report. And I think, you know, the beauty of a mutual is it does align incentives as well, right? You know, the policy holders have an interest in the company doing well, so...
Absolutely.
Okay. What's the next book we're going to talk about?
Grit. I think that's something that as actuaries, you know, actuaries are usually one of the smartest people in the room. And we have a fascination around intelligence and natural talent. I don't know if it's just my perception, but I definitely have or had a fascination. I was... very distracted by intelligence and talent. And what I've also noted is that, you know, you're in a room full of actuaries and there's always, you know, this sort of undertone of gauging the pecking order of intelligence. Because it's a filter that we've seen, that we've experienced ourselves. I mean, it's not an easy course to get through. So this book dispels a lot of those myths around, you know, natural talent and how does that really contribute to success. The three main takeaways for me in this book is around, you know, stamina. And just so Angela Duckworth speaks about grit is about living your life like a marathon and not a sprint. And she talks about how your willingness to fail and learn and start again really does contribute to, you know, you being able to succeed. The other, you know, point that really, really stands out for me is where passion coupled with perseverance really does produce something powerful. And I'd go a step further to say that if it's fueled by purpose, everything just falls into place naturally. And I think the last reason that the book really resonated with me is just, you know, an alignment with my personal values. My dad is someone who always taught us success doesn't happen overnight. You have to put in the hard work. You have to be resilient. And that's really what the book teaches is that growth mindset, that resilient mindset. The willingness to be able to start again, the willingness to be able to continue even long after you're tired and uncomfortable. And that really does contribute to, you know, your ability to achieve. So yeah, it's a book that I read, I think for the first time in, say, 2021, 2022, somewhere around there. When I was actually reading quite a bit.
COVID times.
Yes. And it was a couple of months into my first divisional executive role at RMA Life. And, you know, although RMA, Rand Mutual Assurance, is very much an established business, this division had been created to diversify away from quota legislated benefits and expand into the traditional group life market. And so it was seen very much as, you know, a startup environment with that sort of agile thinking. And this book really helped me understand how perseverance and stamina can really, and that growth mindset, sorry, can really position you well within a startup. You know, you price a product, often there are many failures in a startup. You don't, you know, achieve the expected sales volumes. You may have created a product that looks beautiful on paper. It meets genuine insurance needs but may not be marketable, and that ability to not let that state of failure become a permanent state and to pivot and relearn and do things differently and not be demotivated by the outcomes that you're seeing, that was something that I drew from this book. You know, just to be able to continue, and it's quite similar, you know, in this new role as well. It's a new business. We're not, completely certain about how our products will be received, you know, what our sales volume would be like. There's still a lot of uncertainties. But we've approached it with an agile mindset. We're willing to refine things, sharpen our pencils if we have to make this business work, because we're so passionate about taking mutuality to every South African. But again, you know, it's just that reiteration. It takes up a lot of time, but it's definitely rewarding.
And there's something so liberating about learning that you don't have to rely purely on intelligence and raw talent, because as you say, in that general community, that's very difficult to be the most intelligent one in the room. But if anyone can develop stamina or, you know, resilience and grit, which reminds me of a quote, I think, Isidore Sharp, or I can't remember his surname, but he says excellence is relates to the capacity to withstand pain. So it's just about persevering. You know, the one who can persevere and take the pain is the one who will achieve excellence.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, just that confirmation of what I have been born with is not my ultimate. It's not, the predictor of my success, that I do have some control over it. There's a lot of power in that hopeful message that your ability to learn is not fixed. It's something that can change with effort. And absolutely, I mean, this book I would recommend anybody who's starting something new, especially parents who want to foster resilience and determination in their kids. You know, I would definitely recommend they read this book just to hone in on some of the insights.
So that's Grit by Angela Duckworth. Do you have a favorite quote from this book?
What quote? She says, "Our potential is one thing, and what we do with it is quite another." And there's just so much of power in that. It puts the control back in your hands, and you're not a victim of circumstance. You're able to forge your own path, irrespective of your starting point or your past experiences. And I think, like I said, there's just such a hopeful message in that.
Amazing. Thank you. Well, what's the next book we're going to discuss?
It's a book called The Children of Sugarcane by Joanne Joseph.
Okay.
I loved every single word. Another book that I read in one sitting. It speaks to, it's a fictional, based on a fictional character, Shanti, who hails from Madras in India. And she's not a traditional Indian girl. She has the secret love for literacy. And it's, you know, the story is based at a time where females in India are not really encouraged to read and write. And it's something that, you know, a skill that she learns in secret.
What time period is it set in?
I'd say in the 1800s. So when the indentured laborers first made their way to South Africa. So her story is based around this fictional character who makes her way from Madras to South Africa. And she's in search of a better life, you know, not a traditional arranged marriage, a life that has been already set out for. She's looking for something different. And I think, you know, what I loved about this book is that it's written so poetically. It's well-researched. You know, Joanne Joseph has really spent a lot of time researching stories of different people and bringing it together and just coloring it so artfully with the words that she uses. And yeah, I just think it's one of those books that really stir your soul. And I'd recommend that every South African of Indian descent read this book. just to feel the emotions of what our forefathers felt, and also understand, you know, the responsibility that we have to take their legacy forward and live our lives in a way that, you know, they can be proud, given that they had sacrificed, many of them sacrificed their lives for the future generations. If I can read a favorite quote from there. "Wherever we go, we leave our impression, and all the generations that follow are marked by it too. It occurs to me that the past is neither carved in stone nor recorded singularly by the quill. Perhaps it's etched into the flesh, bones, and memory of human beings and travels silently into the veins of our descendants. Perhaps the only measure of hope lies in the future. For as long as it remains unwritten, it is all we mere mortals have the power to change."
The imagery is so beautiful.
Beautiful. And, you know, she brings the plot with the prose and the words used. She just brings it together so beautifully. It's one of those books that you want to read and reread and remember some of the lines. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like, as you said, it has both the prose, the literary aspect, and also plot to drive it forward. Is she a South African author?
South African author. She's actually a journalist.
Okay. So you say you were, your grandparents came from India, a great-grandparent?
My great-great-grandfather was a two-year-old boy on the ship that came through from India.
Okay, so growing up, did you feel quite connected to your Indian heritage? Do you still have family there, or do you feel very much South African Indian?
Very much South African Indian. I don't speak any Indian languages. I was in India late last year, and the Indian people were just surprised that none of us spoke the language. We seem to be, you know, a little bit of fake Indians. It's definitely not intentional. But I think that, you know, the language has been lost over the generations because our parents were taught to learn English, perfect it. That's how you really get ahead. And yeah, I think it's one of the deep regrets that I do have, and I would like to resolve sometime in the future, you know, just learning an Indian language. But in terms of the culture and traditions, you know, we've tried to preserve it as much as the South African population could. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the sharing of information, globalization, there's just so much that's available to us now that, you know, we may have followed traditions over the years that we didn't really understand, but we're now understanding. And I always say this to family and friends, that the onus is upon us to gather this information and to educate ourselves. Our culture, our traditions are rich in history, and, you know, there's a lot of science backing our religious aspects as well. And it's our responsibility to understand why we do what we do. So yes, very much traditional, but very South African. The cultures are very different. Yeah, I think, you know, going to India, you draw these stark parallels between how we've been raised and how we communicate, and, you know, just our way of life versus that in India. There is definitely a difference. I mean, you know, South Africans, we all have, all of us across, you know, all different races, have so many commonalities that I can't say, you know, that we stand out differently. There may be aspects, yes, but definitely the geest that brings us all together, I mean, you see that across all of the different races.
And I think that's what we should focus on, the things that we have in common. And I think, as you say, you probably realize how South African you are when you go somewhere where, in theory, you should fit in. But you don't, because you're South African.
You see people around you that look like you, but very different from you. I feel a far greater connection with, you know, people back home rather than in India.
So that was Children of Sugarcane by Joanne Joseph. Who recommended that book to you? How did you come across it?
I think it was social media. So I picked it up from, you know, somebody had read it and recommended it. And yeah, I just thought,
that is appealing.
Yes. And, you know, Joanne Joseph, I did like her work, her articles and that. But I really didn't expect the quality of the book that she produced. I was just in complete awe.
Hopefully, yeah, you've convinced our listeners to support some South African literature as well. What's the next book we're going to discuss?
Genius by Bruce Whitfield, How to Take Smart Ideas Global.
He's my intellectual crush, Bruce Whitfield.
Really? Wow. Is it his voice?
I'd say it's the content of what he talks about.
So he's the intelligence, right?
I think so.
And the wit. And the wit. And in this book, he is so authentic. You can actually hear him speak in the words that you read. And here he brings together just a collection of anecdotes. And he brings in these practical examples. It's not just abstract positivity and theory. You're able to really see how some extraordinary South Africans have been able to take the simplest of solutions to everyday problems. And, you know, it's simple. It's not, very complex solutions. It's how do you solve daily problems? And it's those solutions and skills that these extraordinary South Africans have been able to take and succeed on a global stage. I absolutely love the way he writes, the way he speaks. He gives so much of energy into his words. You can actually hear the pace even with which he speaks in the book. And I think, again, you know, what I took away from this book is that there's a balanced optimism in what he presents. You know, there's South Africa, the conditions, the circumstances, it's not all doom and gloom. Mm. There are people who are really thriving from this chaos and really making the most of it. So that's that, you know, inspirational message that comes through. And yeah, I think, you know, just to see what other people have achieved, it really does spark that creative thinking, innovation, problem solving. And yeah, it was just a thorough good read. The other thing that I liked about the book is some of my favorite wine estates are featured in the book. So,
oh, like which ones?
Like Plessier.
I don't know that one.
So Plessier was recently bought over, and he basically talks about, you know, how long it would take this wine estate to actually start seeing the fruits of their investment actually, come to life. And going to Plessier, you kind of see the efforts that are being made to grow the brand and develop skills locally, develop wines that, you know, I must say it's not one of my favorite wines. But
completely independent from the experience of the wine farm.
Exactly. And that's the focus of what they're doing at that wine estate. It's about the experience, it's about the food. It's about bringing all of that together. And with time, the quality of their wine is sure to improve. You know, it's situated between two orchards, I think. So, you know, they're focusing a lot on farm to table and that sort of thing. But yeah, just seeing what he speaks about in the book in everyday life. Another great example is Sweep South. You know, bringing together helpers and being able to book a helper from on an app on your phone. So, you know, all of those ideas, it's solutions to simple everyday problems. And it just makes me wonder, you know, what can I do in my space that's innovative, but also not trying to focus too much on novel ideas, but focusing on execution and adaptation and perfecting that. I think that's what the life insurance industry really needs. I mean, life insurance is life insurance. It's not changing as dynamically as short term, for example. But there's definitely an opportunity for us to simplify I think that there's a huge challenge in our industry around asymmetry of information. And I think it's our responsibility to, foster financial education to the underserved market in South Africa. And at Glue, I must say that that's something that we've really focused on is removing that anxiety. And part of that is providing simplicity. Simple processes, a simple, easy to understand product, simple policy wording.
The life insurance industry, we know, is notorious for not making things simple. And I guess that goes from back office to front office. So would you say in this book, Genius by Bruce Whitfield, there's some inspiration of how to simplify things or where we can simplify things in our industry?
Absolutely. I think, the focus of the book is around how South Africans have taken their ideas and taken it to a global stage, right? So it's exporting these skills and ideas. But I think more than that, it speaks to what can we do as normal South Africans? Because if you look at the stories that he has shared in this book, it's all of them are not the Steve Jobs and the real disruptors of the market. Some of them are just ordinary people. And definitely I think that, reading this book can inspire change makers in the life insurance industry to just think about things differently. And like I said, simplify. Create processes that are easy, products that are easy to understand. We often create products that we think the market wants to buy. And we're not really listening to what it is that they want to buy. We create what we think, our perception of what we think they want. I think there's definitely a lot of inspiration that you can draw on that from his book.
Do you have a favorite quote from this book?
A favorite quote from this book is, oh yes. So, current times are not the most challenging in history, but actually a time of incredible opportunity. And that really speaks to chaos and uncertainty breeds opportunity. And we need to change our mindset away from a victim mentality to how do we solve and look at everything that's happening around us as an opportunity.
I love that. I love because they say, optimists and pessimists may die the same, but they live differently. So it's all about the mindset, right? And finding opportunity when there's chaos. That brings us to the last book we're going to talk about.
The last book is called The Four Future Seasons, How to Anticipate and Prepare for Multiple Potential Futures by Dr. Craig Wing. It does form part of his doctoral research. Very much, a heavy read, very much into strategy and a huge focus on what we know is that the future is becoming increasingly complex and uncertain. And this book provides a framework of how you navigate through making decisions now that will help you create a better future and help you prepare for the different states of what your future could look like. The focus is not on the what, not on what does the future hold, but on the how and how can we create better futures. And, I think the way he presents the book is based on the limits of knowledge. There are known knowns.
The 2x2.
Yes, the quadrants. So the known knowns, the known unknowns, the unknown knowns, and then the unknown unknowns, right? And he likens these to the seasons. At a startup, I like to think that there are, some elements where you're in your summer season. And then there are some elements that are just winter and, you're going to have to think outside the box and you're going to have to really prepare for different states of what could happen in the future. And his book really does provide these tools that help with decision making now that could basically help you navigate what could come in the future? It's, like I said, very much, you know, theory-based, quite a heavy read, but he does include lots of practical examples. That's the other thing that I like about this book. You know, it does include practical applications and some anecdotes as well about how you can actually identify the season that you're in and the transitioning between the seasons. For when I choose a self-help book, it does need to have practically implementable solutions. I don't want to read about, you know, theory only, and I don't know how it relates to practical everyday life. And I think this book is a good balance of both. I read it a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, it's one of those books that I would want to reread, but reread with you know, the lens of this new startup and my current position in mind. So, you know, what can we implement within our business? And there's definitely, you know, the obvious takeaways around author planning, you know, the stress and scenario test that you could run and how you look at it with the different lens. There's definitely what we're seeing is just generally there's change happening, but at such a rapid pace that, you know, we really cannot fathom how things are changing. I mean, AI is just one example of that, quantum computing another. You know, it's something that we know about, but there's a lot of unknowns around that as well. So yeah, definitely something that I think people in business and strategy would benefit from reading. And just Dr. Craig Wing, as an author, he's worked at Google. He's had also a whole list of accolades, very, very much future thinking. And I first met him at a conference. Yes, I first met him at a seminar held by one of the large reinsurers. And his talk was just so inspiring. And he really just drew on the need for a book like this at this time. Mm. And I thought I really need to just get a copy and start reading.
Too bad you couldn't get that one signed as well.
I know.
To follow him around to the next conference. What do you think it is about you and your personality or character that has drawn you to these kind of startup creative positions in your career?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. What has drawn me to it? I think it was probably started in my consulting experience. It was when I was quite junior in my career, and I just loved the problem solving, the rate at which you learn in a consulting company. And we are a very small consulting team, but also being multidisciplined. You know, you're not just working on one calculation in one company. You know, my experience spans over life insurance and short-term insurance, valuations, and product and pricing.
Okay.
So when I had moved from Alexander Forbes Insurance Consultants, little consulting team, servicing the small to medium-sized South African insurers and insurers in Africa, it was very easy for me to make the move to Rand Mutual Assurance, where there's a split between life and short-term. It's sort of a composite insurer. And because I was the first actuarial resource hired in-house by RMA, I was exposed to literally everything. So valuations, capital, solvency, and then product development and pricing. So I think that was, where it was first sparked, you know, being able to contribute holistically to the business and across different disciplines. And quite similarly with Glue, you know, now it's not just product development and pricing, although that is the focus for now. There's a lot that we are thinking of in pipeline, and it really does speak to the experience that I've gained over the years. I think I would not be happy. I would be very discontent just running one calculation or evaluation for one business or a company day in and day out. I love the challenge. I love problem solving. I like understanding how drawing the parallels between what I do and what I've done to date and the books that I'm very interested in is, yes, it's the personal growth, like grit, for example, you know, just that stamina that you definitely need in a startup. From Dr. Emmanuel Taban's book, where he talks about taking ownership of your destiny. You know, I really feel a deep sense of ownership in what I create. Because, you know, I've developed models and developed calculations, processes, documentation and that from scratch. There's very much a personal element to it, like my baby, I like to call it. So, yeah, I think the books that I've chosen do align to the hardworking nature. I mean, like I said, in this role, I've worked on over weeks and, you know, getting 4 to 5 hours of sleep. But it's like I said, you know, it's about the bigger picture. It's about what you're able to achieve and see your ideas and your hard work really just come to fruition and being appreciated by the various stakeholders.
I think it's, as you say, you're able to put in those hours because it's your baby and you're passionate about it. I think that's what enables that credible dedication.
Yeah, it's the passion as well.
Do you have a favorite quote from For Future Seasons you can share with us?
For Future Seasons. So Dr. Craig Wing, he talks about post-Algia. He says, the future can be a scary place when confronted by the realities of today. A conflict in the Middle East, the war between Russia and Ukraine, aftershocks of the COVID pandemic, threats of global recession, widespread impact of AI crowd industries.
You can tell this is a recent book.
This exactly, right? But I think what didn't make it into the book was the trade wars.
Right.
Increasing global temperatures, multiple assassination attempts against political leaders, and it goes on. And most people live in a state of post-algia. If nostalgia is a longing for a paradisical past, postalgia refers to the longing for a heavenly future. A logical counterpart for nostalgia is a longing for paradise yet to come. And I think what's so powerful about that is we're hoping for a utopian future. And sometimes just the uncertainties and complexities of what the future holds is actually an excuse for us to not start planning for those future states. And I think his book really does give you the confidence, the controls and the tools that you are able to practically implement so you can be more future ready.
Post-algia, I love that.
Post-algia, yeah.
All right, so the five books we spoke about are The Boy Who Never Gave Up by Dr. Emmanuel Taban, Grit by Angela Duckworth, Children of Sugarcane by Joanne Joseph, Genius by Bruce Whitfield, and Four Future Seasons by Dr. Craig Wing. So if I had to be very cruel and send you to a desert island with just one of these books, which one would it be and why?
On a deserted island? Definitely The Boy Who Never Gave Up, because I think I'd need to draw inspiration from what he did, you know, walking without any possessions, penniless, no shoes, dusty terrain.
Yeah, difficult,
very practical guide. Yeah, and he doesn't really speak about, you know, what you'd have to do in a survival situation. But I think the one thing that he does say in his book is that the journey, although it was very arduous and very difficult, his focus was never on the dangers, you know, wild animals, people robbing him, because that happened along the way, being caught or imprisoned. He just focused on taking those steps, being able to cover the ground that he did daily. And he was happy because he was just moving forward. And I think that, you know, being on a deserted island, that's probably what you'd need to get you through, right? It's living each day and surviving for that day. Yeah, so probably his book.
Good answer. Yeah, I guess we can imagine that island being Zanzibar as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm in for it anytime.
Armed with your book. So as a thank you for being on the podcast, I have a gift for you. And I feel like it speaks to what we've been talking about today. This is The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. Have you heard of this book?
No, I haven't.
I haven't read it myself. I'm very keen to read it, but apparently it's...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I bet it matches your dress. It's all like this. It's, I think, a practical guide on how to create something and how to fulfill, you know, your vision or how to bring your vision to life. And just from the way we've been speaking, I've always held that, you know, actors can be creative too. Just because we're not painting or taking photos or sculpting doesn't mean we aren't, you know, using our creative brains. So I hope that this might be of use to you and bring even more of your creative visions to life.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Pamela.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So tell us, where can people find you if they want to follow your journey or get in touch?
LinkedIn. So you can pop me a message. Let me know if you want to connect. Yeah.
So we'll see you on LinkedIn. And any last thoughts or messages for our listeners?
Probably two aspects I want to touch on. We're in a very fortunate position that we've had our goals met largely, right? Sitting in the roles that we sit in the organizations that we sit in. And it's, you know, just an encouragement to everybody out there to understand what your greater purpose is and understand the role that we have to play in taking other people along with us and empowering and uplifting others. I'm very passionate about social impact. I think there's a connectedness, interconnectedness in our roles as life insurance actuaries. You know, I spoke a little bit around financial education and our responsibility there. You know, we all are very acutely aware of our responsibility around future financial sustainability and viability of the businesses that we work for. But more than that, you know, we're in the business of taking care of people when they are no longer able to take care of themselves. And we should always look for these opportunities to create value for our customers, optimize on that value. You know, the value for money metrics, for example, is something that I've always been passionate about. You know, where does a client's money actually go? And just that focus on being able to deliver meaningful solutions that impact lives. I think the other aspect is probably on being able to make financial security available to everybody in South Africa. And that speaks to our role in financial education and our responsibilities there. But also, you know, break the cycle of poverty. If we're able to increase financial literacy in the work that we do, that empowers communities. You know, it helps them in their risk management and financial planning. And it breaks the cycle of being financially set back by unexpected and adverse circumstances that very often wipe out, you know, what individuals have been able to accumulate over time. And being able to overcome and creating that financial resilience for individuals, it will have a ripple effect. You know, I always say that we're not just selling policies. We're breaking down systemic barriers to financial security, financial inclusion, and we really are just forging the path of success to the people that we serve. I think that's something that I'm so passionate about, and I hope that our listeners are able to draw some inspiration from that and implement that in their daily roles and lives.
Well, yeah, it's a big problem, but it's just about taking that first step, as we've been saying, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Marisha. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Pamela. It's been lovely chatting to you.